This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the chilly voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Matthew Beadle, how are we?
I'm not too bad, mate, not too bad. I've been a bit cold this week because the temperature has dropped. It's supposed to be getting slightly better as of this week and beyond. Apparently, we're going to be pushing up to 12 and 13. But last week and the weeks previously have been, yes, somewhat chilly.
Yeah, well, it's not been great here. I mean, it's obviously the worst kept secret that I do spend a lot of time in Dubai. I am here now. And I'll be honest, we've had our issues here as well. It definitely dipped below 30 last week. And I'm pretty sure I saw a cloud, which was, I mean, obviously I was fuming. It might have been like a chemtrail, I'm not sure. But there was definitely something in the sky. And so it's been tough here too, to be honest. So I certainly feel your pain.
Well, you shall be back, of course, in the next few days, in fact, back in Blighty, Richard, and we are delighted to have you back. Over the course of the next 7 to 10 days or so, we shall be going to a few games. So one word of advice, my friend, wrap up warm.
Well, I've got 6 games lined up at the moment, I think, as it stands, so I'll bore you with those games. So there's a Charlton game on the Saturday, hopefully Luton Man City on the Sunday. I think I'm going to go to Reading versus Oxford, which is on the Tuesday. Then going to go to QPR versus Plymouth on the Wednesday. Might be going to a 23s game on the Friday. And then hopefully Chelsea, Sheffield United on the Saturday. So action packed. But what I will say, and on a slightly more serious note, it's really difficult for goalkeepers this time of year. It did make me think when I've watched a lot of the footage recently, made me remember playing in those sorts of conditions. And I think people watching don't always fully appreciate that it is a little bit more difficult for goalkeepers in other positions. You're not moving around as much. Of course, it is a goalkeeper's responsibility to try and stay as warm as you possibly can. But I think all goalkeepers can relate to that day when you're playing and it's a bit wet underfoot, it's a bit icy, your feet are freezing, your feet go a little bit numb. You're then asked to kick a ball 70 yards with numb feet. At the same time, your fingers are starting to go as well, and you've got to deal with shots from distance, trying to hold them when you can't feel your hands. It's really, really difficult. And I'll always stand by the fact that I think if you're playing in slightly warmer climates, it's definitely that little bit nicer as a goalkeeper. And I was probably a bad example where, when I think back, I enjoyed the months of August, September, April, May more than any other months. And of course, the bulk of the season is now. There's so much that's going on at the moment, but it's so, so difficult for goalkeepers.
How do you combat that then? Because you are a man who's spoken much about psychology over the years and a fear sometimes of going out there and playing. Nerves got to you, anxiety got to you. So were there moments when you are getting to December, January, February, where it is really, really cold and you're thinking, I just don't want to be out there?
Oh yeah, all the time. Especially the evening games where you'd have a lot of time to think. You'd be sat there all day looking outside and it's wet, it's miserable, it's freezing cold. And you're thinking, there's a lot of other things I'd rather be doing this evening than going out. And of course, because you're feeling the nerves, the pressure that comes with these games, the scrutiny, the spotlight, it's not an easy situation to be in. And I can still think back now, I knew the moment I woke up that I had a game that day. Now, look, over time, you then learn mental strategies to deal with that. And even when it comes to the conditions, you learn ways in which you can really manage the situation. So for instance, for me, again, without going into too much detail, but I'd dress up so warmly for the warm-up, so many layers. As soon as I got in from the warm-up, I'd have a hot shower before I then played the game. And then even during the game, it was just constantly on the move. So I'll be moving, jogging. Because I think as well, and this is, I don't know if this is real or not, but I think it was real, is that I don't think I've got the best circulation. I always had my hands, I think I told you about that. I was allergic to gloves, etc., etc. Similarly, my feet, I just found my feet got cold so quickly. My hands got cold so quickly. So because of that, I knew that I couldn't just kind of relax during the game. I'd have to keep myself on the move to try and keep the blood pumping, to try and keep as warm as I possibly could. I'd love to know my stats for some of the games, because I'm pretty sure that I'd have done the same sort of distance that an outfield player would have done, just purely trying to keep myself warm. Because if you have that one moment in the 87th minute and you're not ready, of course, it's going to make it that much more difficult to make the save.
A shower post warm-up. I love these little goalkeeper quirks. If anybody has quirks that they undertake before a game, during a game, after a game, in the warm-up. Please do let us know. We love to hear these stories. But wrapping up warm too as well for the warm-up, did that not negate in some way, counteract the point of trying to stay warm? Because then after you wrapped up warm and you said you then changed into your normal gear, did you then not go out and probably felt the cold even more?
No, because for me, it was just getting the body as warm as I possibly could. Similarly, so I'd then completely change, obviously, kit for the game and then completely change kit for the second half as well. So I'd almost get changed again at halftime. If I could have another shower at halftime, I would. Sometimes that wasn't possible, but I'd spend a lot of time just going to the sink, hot water, running my hands under the hot water because I just wanted to be as warm as I possibly could. It was almost that idea. Like, let's use an iPhone battery as a good analogy, you know, and it runs down to zero. In fact, mine runs down to zero very quickly, but it runs down to zero. I kind of felt like get myself to 100 to start the half. And if I can just maintain it as best I can in each half, then I can get through the game.
Wow, that's really interesting stuff. A good intro to the podcast this week. And if all else fails, just go and design yourself a pair of like heat pack gloves or something.
You know, I did that, don't you? That was one of my inventions that didn't take off. But I did. I had some designed out in, I can't remember what it was now, and they sent them through. And in theory, it made sense. It was a little pocket on the back of the glove, and you could put one of those heat packs in the back of the glove. But then all I found is that the back of my hands were toasty warm, but my palms, the important part of what I needed, were still freezing cold. So yeah, that didn't quite take off, unfortunately.
Well, Richard, we have plenty to get into on this podcast. A lovely start. Let's continue, shall we? On with the show.
Let's do it.
In the Premier League, we shall start at the Vitality. Bournemouth 2, Aston Villa 2, and Emi Martinez, a very, very good performance. A couple of saves from Dominic Solanke, one from Antoine Semenya. The first one I thought we'd mention from Solanke I enjoyed. From a reading of the situation perspective, I felt like that's everything he's learned over the years. He's judging the pass, the body shape of Solanke, he's anticipating where the ball was going to be. We haven't spoken about him too much in recent weeks just because he's been a very steady Eddie, Mr. Consistent, and sometimes he just pulls out these excellent saves which we must talk about.
He does, and I think that's, you probably said the word there, consistency. He is a consistent 7, 8 out of 10 every week. Very rarely does he have a moment. He must be now considered, you know, certainly, well, he is considered obviously one of the world's best, having won the World Cup, of course. But I think, again, with this consistency, he's just solidifying that even more. And yeah, look, I thought he was excellent again. Two very similar saves in terms of reading the situation, as you mentioned. I think it's that, it's the... And this comes back to, you can do all the drills in the world when it comes to goalkeeping, but that little bit of anticipation, that goalkeeper intelligence, knowing the game. So when that's fired in, knowing at that moment to dive in the way that he has, where he's, again, you know, you can't get to the foot of the ball. You can't smother it. You can't make it a 50-50. But what you can do is predict what's about to happen and give yourself the best chance of making the save by making yourself as big as you can based on where the ball's going to be struck from. And he did that on two occasions. A nice tip over the bar as well. I thought, yeah, it was another top performance.
Moving on to two goals conceded, which I'd like your opinion on. The first one, Edison, for the Tottenham opener from Heung-Min Son in the 3-3 draw, the thrilling 3-3 draw between Man City and Spurs.
Yeah, it's a tough one in that if this is a yard further to his right, he makes a save. It's in that horrible little corridor where you either go with your feet, I don't think you get a foot to this, you have to go with your hands, but it's in that awkward place where it's down by your foot. It's actually a more difficult save than if the shot was that little bit wider. So, look, it's one that he'll look at and feel he could have done a bit more with. You know, it's struck well, and at the same time, it is a really difficult one. I think we've all conceded this type of goal when it goes in that little corridor. What do you get to it? Is it your foot? Is it your hand? Do you just collapse on it? Have you got time to do that? Possibly not. So, yeah, look, it's one that he'll feel he could have done a little bit more, but at the same time, I don't think it's a big error.
The second one from Sam Johnston for the West Ham opener, scored by Mo Akudis. That was in the 1-1 draw between West Ham and Crystal Palace. Before I come to you, we've got some correspondence from Tom Goddard sent over email. Tom says, guys, just watching West Ham v Palace, and whilst I shouldn't be surprised that Roy Keane's the goalkeeper's got to save it statement regarding Sam Johnstone on the opening goal, I still feel my jaw metaphorically hitting the floor. Even when Dave Jones asks him whether the deflection left him with enough time, Keane just glibly states, that's football, you've got to expect that. I can't offer any real insight into the mind of a pundit who has never played in goal, but it was interesting last week that when Keane was talking about Garnacho's overhead kick against Everton, he then said that as he'd never done one, he didn't feel qualified to talk about it, yet he'll gladly throw every keeper in the Prem under the bus with absolutely no understanding of the position, brackets it seems. It is frustrating beyond belief to keep hearing the same uninformed sound bites. Rant over. Keep up the good work. Love the podcast, as does my son, Walter. Thank you, Tom.
Excellent. Do you know what? He's hit the nail on the head. I mean, there's not too much to add to that because everything he's just said there is exactly my viewpoint. You know, the fact that he won't comment on an overhead kick, but he will happily comment on goalkeeping. And again, this situation here, there's very little chance Johnstone's got. And I'll go into a bit of detail in a second. But again, it's just very generic. It's very basic. Yeah, you've looked at it. You see that it's gone quite close to him. So, oh, he's got to do better. But actually, can you break it down? Can you explain why he should do better? Or alternatively, have someone on there that can actually explain why he can't do any better in this situation. And the reason he can't is that as it's struck, of course, you react off the initial strike. So if you imagine as you're setting, you're just dropping into your set, the ball's coming towards you, and this all happens in a split second, you can't then move on the deflection. So unless you're incredibly agile, flexible, and you can somehow get your hand down next to your foot and scoop it away, there's no chance of making the save. You've already made the play based on the initial shot, and the deflection means that it doesn't matter whether it goes right next to your foot or goes in the far corner. You're not going to be able to save it. But no one can give that insight because, again, none of them played in goal. So they'll look at it from a real basic standpoint and give a really basic answer and almost a, oh, he's just got to save it. He's just got to save it. No. Explain, please break it down and give me a good argument as to why you think he should save that ball. And I'd love for someone to give a counter argument and just put the record straight. And look, we'll keep repeating ourselves every week. And who knows, maybe in 5-10 years when we're that bit older and we're on our 5,000th podcast, then perhaps at that point someone will finally come to the fore and be that person that can stand up for the goalkeepers.
Lovely stuff. Tom, thank you for contacting us. And if you'd like to do what Tom did and have your message read out on the podcast, it's very easy to do so on Twitter at GK Union, on email hello@goalkeepersunion.net, or on our phone number 07503673020. Now, Richard, I have two further questions for you. The first one involves Quivin Kelleher conceding 3 goals for Liverpool in their 4-3 victory over Fulham. Now, the reason I bring this up is because this is the first time Liverpool have conceded 3 in the Premier League this season. They've only conceded more than once, or they had only conceded more than once twice before Sunday. I'd just like to ask you, without Alisson, is there anything in that at all, that Liverpool conceded 3 goals for the first time this season when Alisson wasn't in goal?
No, I mean, look, I think we need to be careful. It's, you know, it's always the unknown. How often do we see it when a goalkeeper comes out of the team and another goalkeeper goes in and keeps the first clean sheet they've kept in however long? And naturally, you can ask those kind of questions. Sometimes it is just that type of day. You might not necessarily have a great deal of chance with what's going on. And at the same time, I do feel for Kelleher. You know, we spoke about it a lot on the pod, and it's very unusual his rise to be where he is. Credit to him in that, you know, he's doing what he's doing, and he's made such a good name for himself whenever he stepped in, and he's always done a great job. And at the same time, I'm still of the belief that, you know, goalkeepers need to build that CV, you know, however they do it. And certainly someone like Kelleher, he won't have been short of options for championship loans, I'm sure, over the last few years. But, and I get it as well, that from a club's point of view, to allow him to go and do that, they'd need to replace him. There's a bit of work involved in that. You don't know if you're going to get a profile in that's going to be quite as good as Kelleher, which could impact Liverpool. They wouldn't want to do that for obvious reasons. But at the same time, this point comes where at some point he will either take over or he'll move on. And you just wonder, he hasn't had that bank of games. Now, we're not going to know until he does have that real run and he gets the 20, 30, 40 games. But the last thing Liverpool would want is that some of those moments that you might have in your first 20 or 30 games. In fact, I go back and I'm going to use another little analogy. I think this could be the day of analogies, I think. Is it analogy? Is that the right word? I think that's the right word. But it's like when you learn to drive. You know, you learn to drive, and the first however many months, you make probably more mistakes than you make for the rest of your career driving. I don't know if it's called a career, actually. It's probably the wrong word when it comes to driving. But of course, you're going to make that many more mistakes early on because it's a different environment. You're getting used to it. And then before you know it, becomes second nature. And I think there is a similarity when it comes to goalkeeping in that it doesn't matter how good you are on the training field and how good you are in 23s football, getting used to playing in front of thousands, well, millions, if not billions on TV as well, is a completely different environment. Again, credit to him because to this point, whenever he stepped in, on the whole, he's done very well. But at the same time, you do just wonder whether he's going to need that at some point just to really hit the top, top level.
Okay, my next question involves Brighton and Jason Steele and Bart Verbruggen. I'd like to know whether you think there's less focus on this number one flip-flopping just because Brighton are, and I say this with the greatest respect, not a top, top club, so not in that pantheon of top six, seven Premier League clubs.
Yes, in short, yeah, it's obviously, yeah, we're all aware that there's certain clubs that will get the majority of the attention. You know, even Man United, who aren't doing particularly well this season, yet they still get more attention than anyone because, of course, fans worldwide is probably 20, 30, 50 times what Brighton have. So they naturally will gear a lot of the stories towards them because they know it will be that much of interest to more people. So in short, yes. And the fact that they're doing well, I think that's, you know, it obviously brings less attention when a team's doing well if you're flip-flopping goalkeepers. I still, and again, I might be a bit old school with this, but I still sort of stick by my point in that I think just historically you look at teams that really kick on, you do have that 1-2-3 dynamic, which they don't have yet. I think at some point it will settle down and it will open up and that will happen. But yeah, to this point, it doesn't quite feel like it has.
I'll give you some stats just quickly on the games that they've played this season, which is quite eye-opening, I think. So, the games they've played in all competitions this season. Steele started the first two games of the season. Verbruggen then came in for two. Steele then came back in for two, including the Europa League. Verbruggen then came in for two, including the EFL Cup. Steele back in for two, including the Europa League. Verbruggen in for one. That was the 2-2 draw with Liverpool. Steele then came back in for three, including the Europa League. Verbruggen then came in for two, including the Europa League. Steele back in for one. That was the 1-1 draw with Sheffield United. Verbruggen in for two, including the Europa League. And then Steele was in at the weekend. So in total, Steele in goal for Brighton has racked up four wins, one of those in the Europa League. That's 11 points in the Premier League. Verbruggen has racked up five wins, two of those in the Europa League. And that is 11 points in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's mental.
It's mad.
It's mental.
It's crazy, isn't it?
And again, the other point, which again, I think is different for goalkeepers than it is for other positions, is that, you know, it's one of the hardest things for a goalkeeper to step in having not played for even a couple of weeks, two, three, 4 weeks, because you're getting back up to the speed of the game, the relationship with those around you. So ordinarily, I can talk from personal experience, I felt like I played my best football. It was never the first game I stepped in or the first couple of games. It was once I started to build that momentum, the relationships, and you see the pictures that much quicker when you are playing every week. And there is that confidence that you will naturally have knowing that you are the one. Of course, you've always got some pressure on you, you've always got a challenge, etc., etc., but you just feel that bit more relaxed in terms of how you're playing. Now, I suppose the counter argument could be is that they know that this is a strategy and it's going to be back and forth, so maybe they feel okay because of that. They know that it's nothing personal, it's not being dropped for bad performance, it is just a strategy. But I go back to that point that I just think that playing every single game, you look at the goalkeepers that are ordinarily doing it, have had top, top seasons, it is just because you are in the rhythm. And I can't help but feel that missing the odd game here and there, you're just going to break that rhythm ever so slightly.
Over to St James's Park, where it was Newcastle 1, Manchester United 0. And we are going to start with Andre Onana, who, according to his manager, Erik ten Hag, is the second best goalkeeper in the Premier League based on stats. So this was in the build-up to the game at the weekend. Now, if we look at the stats, we're not going to delve too deep into goalkeeper stats because we tend not to do it too much on the show. But he was equal before the game. He was equal first for clean sheets. He's now been overtaken by Nick Pope, who we are going to give a clean sheet to, even though he came off in that game. And Onana has prevented 3.67 goals this season. That is the second most in the league. Now, last week we spoke about the fact that we've spoken about the fact that he seemed to be settling in as the number one at Manchester United. And then Wednesday night and Galatasaray happened.
Yeah, well, this is, I suppose, where, you know, it goes back to the point you made before in that certain clubs are going to get that much more publicity. It is that much more pressurized in terms of the scrutiny. And he has had a lot of very good games, you know, but at the same time, he's had several moments. I keep calling them moments. I don't like the word errors, but he has had quite a few of them. And of course, each one has been highlighted in a big way. You know, and obviously we haven't spoke about the European games because they were last week, but yeah, they weren't great. You know, it was, and again, it's a big night. It's a night that everybody's watching. And there is an element of that too, that you know what it's like if you, and certainly I know what it was like, where you made a mistake, I don't know, on a Tuesday night somewhere that wasn't necessarily considered a big game, but you still win the game 2-1. It is very quickly forgotten, rightly or wrongly. But if you make that mistake when it is a game as big as this was, then naturally there's going to be that much more of a spotlight. The goals were interesting. It's Galatasaray. I will stand up for him or stick up for him on the free kick to an extent, because, or the free kick that was whipped in that he spilled and it's gone in his net. And it is a really difficult free kick to deal with, in that you've got defenders running across him. You've got that situation where you're going for the initial ball. You see the people running across you. It is then one that ideally, in a perfect world, you just go for the initial ball. You look to hold it. But it's a really hard technique to execute, especially when you've got people running across and the distractions that come because of that. And you could see that in that moment, maybe he's just changed his decision. He's tried to then parry it away. But even the parry away is going to be difficult because you've got everybody running in towards you. It's very difficult to parry it into a safe area. And of course, in the end, the parry ends up going in the corner and it doesn't look good at all. I think the other one he'll be more disappointed with because, yeah, look, I think he's just guessed. And we talk about this a lot. You know, my mentality towards this, if they put it over the wall, put it into the top corner, ordinarily they're going to score. I think when it goes your side, there's very few occasions where you look at it and say, I had no chance. And certainly with this one, you know which similarity I'm going to bring back, which actually didn't get anywhere near as much scrutiny back in the day. And you're shaking your head because you knew this was coming, didn't you?
Oh, God. Yeah. As soon as the goal went in, to be fair, I thought Rich is going to talk about 1999 and Schmeichel and Barnsley. Here we go.
Very similar. Very, very similar in that the moment you make that step behind the wall and try and predict that it's going over the wall, yeah, you might make an unbelievable save if it goes over the wall into the top corner. He probably then saves that. But you have to protect your side as best you can and essentially give up the top corner over the wall. And with this, it is just that. I think he's tried to read the situation, misread it. And yeah, in the end, it's not a nice moment for him.
I hear what you're saying about the second goal being difficult to judge, being a horrible situation, thinking that maybe Anthony Martial is going to get a flick on the free kick that's come in. But I feel like that was more of a moment, not an error, than the first one. And I also think that surely if you are a top level goalkeeper and you're playing for a club like Manchester United, let's ignore the club, in fact. If you are a top level goalkeeper, you've got to be making that save. Like that is, you know, we're balanced on here. We'll speak about goalkeeping in a positive light all the time, but that's poor goalkeeping.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying it's not an error. I'm not saying that at all. Like it is one that he will be really disappointed with it. I think just to back him up that bit, it's not an easy one to deal with. It's not where I see, you know, I've seen a lot of the comments on social media and what have you. And of course, people go way over the top on social media. But I think goalkeepers will appreciate that when you've got a free kick being whipped in like that, it's hard to hold at the best of times anyway, even if nobody's around. But when you've got them people rushing in, knowing that you can't really parry it safely, knowing that it could get a flick. So you're kind of then half and half. Do you stay and wait for the flick? Do you go for the initial ball? It's not as easy as perhaps it's been made out to be. But at the same time, I think absolute worst case, you know, to get a parry and keep it back in play and then just hope for a little bit of luck, you know, in best case, if you are able to hold on to that. If you're able to hold on to that, and of course, you know, there's a lot of goalkeepers that do, and no doubt another situation he might, that for me would be considered top goalkeeping.
Okay, speaking of stats, just very quickly, there was an article on the Sky Sports website prior to the game between Man City and Spurs, which was lauding Guglielmo Vicario. We love to see that. We love all the coverage that we can get for goalkeepers, and there was a very positive take on Vicario's start to life in the Premier League with Spurs. But there was also a little box out which compared Vicario to Lloris. The box out, which is just mad, was comparing Vicario league stats this season versus Lloris's last six seasons at Spurs. So, of course, there are certain elements of those stats, like saves per 90, where Vicario is just slightly higher, and saves from shots inside the box per 90, where he's just slightly higher. But I think the biggest one for me was errors leading to a goal. Vicario, surprisingly, after half a season in the Premier League, has no errors leading to a goal, whereas Lloris, in his last six seasons, has 14 errors leading to a goal. This type of comparison is just absolutely ridiculous. And people might look at that and go, oh, I'll tell you what, look at that. Vicario, much better than Lloris. Yes, because that's half a season versus six seasons.
Excellent. Excellent. But actually the key stat, I think, or not even the key stat, because, yeah, look, we spoke about save percentage and what have you. But Lloris was, I think, 72, 73%. And Vicario, I think, 70%. Now, again, we spoke about this loads when he played, and that Lloris was top. You know, I think it's very easy. We use the term overfamiliarity. Yeah, things shifted a bit. You could sense that the last season or two for whatever reason. But over the period of time he was in the Premier League, he was excellent. He was slightly different in terms of his style and technique than many other goalkeepers, but he was so effective in what he did. And I'd always argue he never quite got the credit that he really deserved. But as you say, at the moment, that type for Vicario, I think he has. He's come in. He's exceeded expectation. I think that's fair to say, because he kind of came in almost a little bit under the radar. It wasn't one of them where there were tons of clubs that were bidding for him. It almost just popped up on Sky Sports News one day that they'd signed Vicario, especially when everyone thought it might be Raya or certain other goalkeepers were in the mix. So it was a little bit of a surprise, and look, huge credit to him, because I think he has massively exceeded expectation. I love how he plays, really good energy. Some of the saves he's made already and some of the performances have been very, very good. So doesn't take anything away from that. But as you say, to kind of almost try and elevate it further with nonsense stats, it's a very you just see it far too often, and people that won't read into it or look at it objectively, yeah, they could create a very different story as to what is the reality.
Okay, finishing up in the Premier League, we are going to touch on the Newcastle situation, and we've had a voice note in from long-time listener Stephen Waite. Let's just play this.
Evening, guys. Just wondered if Rich has managed to sort out De Gea to Newcastle yet. Interesting move that'd be.
There we go. Have you managed to sort that out? Because Nick Pope is now out for a period with a dislocated shoulder, which first and foremost is very upsetting for Nick Pope. He's been very good this season. Really good performance in the Champions League against Paris Saint-Germain in midweek. Not involved in the England squad, of course, but many people calling for him to be, because he has been, just like Emi Martinez, Mr. Consistency again this season. So he's out for a period of time, likely to be out for the remainder of the season, possibly. Newcastle have Dubravka, they have Karius, they have Gillespie. What next?
Yeah, as you say, first and foremost, gutted for him, because he's been excellent. You know, Newcastle fans adore him, rightly so. You know, I think with the England selection, we've mentioned it before, you know, there's obviously a certain style that England play. Maybe he doesn't quite fit, but I think, yeah, most teams in the world, you know, he could quite easily be England's number one if it was a slightly different style of play. So first and foremost, gutted for him. It does sound like it's reasonably serious. You hope it's not. I know he had a shoulder issue before, so I don't know if it's the same shoulder or not. But yeah, fingers crossed it's not as serious as it looks. And then the question is, what do they do? Like you say, they have got three goalkeepers there, so they could stay as they are. Of course, you know, Dubravka, whenever he stepped in, has shown just how good he is. And of course, previously was very much the outright one and was excellent. So there is that as a potential. Naturally, the couple of names that straight away get linked are the likes of De Gea, the likes of Aaron Ramsdale. Just to touch on both of them, De Gea, I mean, it'd be a really interesting one. Would love to see him back in the Premier League. Yeah, I suppose it could be a good fit. The difficulty is as well, no one really knows what shape De Gea's in. I know that he puts the odd bit out on Instagram and he's keeping himself fit, but that's very different to stepping in to the Premier League, to the Champions League, etc., etc. So there would be certain question marks about that one for obvious reasons. Ramsdale, first and foremost, you just don't see Arsenal strengthening a rival. The counter argument to that is, of course, he wouldn't be able to play against Arsenal. So him going there, if he did very well, it might take points off some of the other rivals and what have you. So yeah, possibly. But then the other part is Arsenal would need to replace him, which my gut says they don't really want to be doing in a January window. That's more of a summer situation to deal with. So again, I'm not sure if I see that, but they're the two, no doubt, that the bookies will have as favourites. You've then got the outside bet, someone like a Kasper Schmeichel. Could you see someone like him coming back and taking that role, or certainly competing with Dubravka? But then you look around the rest of the Premier League, look around the rest of Europe, it just depends whether they're going to go really big. because if they go really big, then yeah, a January window, you can go and spend a hell of a lot and bring in someone that might be a successor to Pope and do it early. Whereas you'd think ordinarily that's the kind of thing that most teams want to deal with in the summer. So I'm certainly keeping an eye on it, and I'm fascinated by the situation. I really have no idea what direction they're going to go in, but yeah, I've got a feeling it might be an interesting couple of weeks on that front.
Interesting. So we don't normally speculate. We don't normally involve ourselves in transfer rumour, but I just thought, yeah, this was an interesting point to discuss. And in fact, we've just mentioned someone there in Hugo Lloris. What about him?
Yeah. I mean, look, and you could argue Hugo Lloris, it's good, yeah, really good shout, because again, he is training day to day. I know he's not been involved in match days and certainly hasn't had that game experience since last season, but yeah, he's done it at the very, very top level. He's won the World Cup. He's, you know, a very successful goalkeeper and could certainly deal with the cauldron that is St. James's Park and the types of games they've got. So yeah, do you know what? I forgot about him, but yes, definitely add him into the mix too.
It is the EFL overview, and only the Championship this weekend, of course, because it was FA Cup second round weekend. And in the Championship, in the second tier, there were really good saves from Anthony Patterson in Sunderland's draw at Millwall and Senny Dieng in Middlesbrough's defeat at Leeds. Patterson preventing an impudent flick from Tom Bradshaw from going in, and Dieng denying Jorginho Rutter with the striker through on goal. Both looking very adept on the deck throughout two. Chris Maxwell rivaling them for save of the weekend with awesome adjustment to boot Harry Darling's swerver over the bar. Huddersfield taking a point away from Swansea. All 3 points went to Southampton, and Gavin Batsuna, who showed excellent judgment and execution to nod away a loose ball with Cardiff's Yaku Mate on the charge. Now, due to the resulting collision, some quarters suggested it was rash by Batsunu. Not this one, however. Very good goalkeeping in my book. Nothing Ryan Allsop could do to stop Watford's Wesley Hoot's decent drive from close to 100 yards out, other than to brilliantly berate the attacker who carelessly gave the ball away in the middle of the park. And Ben Hamer with a mammoth penalty stop in the same game. So in for captain and stalwart Dan Backman, diving low to his right to palm away Jaden Philogene's spot kick. That was his first penalty save since April Fool's Day 2014. The Hornets going on to win the game 2-1, making it 5 maximums from their last 8.
Yeah, quite a lot to get through there. Certainly to start with Ben Hamer, because I did stream this game and I thought he was excellent. You know, talk about goalkeepers stepping in, never easy. Certainly when you're stepping in for someone who has been very much never present for quite some time now, captain as well, of course, Dan Backman. And yeah, Ben Hamer, 3 games he's played, 3 victories. You know, so credit to Watford as well in that, like you say, he was available for this game, but they've decided to give Ben another chance, and he certainly took it. A couple of brilliant saves in this. Great penalty save, big moment, and a huge 3 points for Watford. Chris Maxwell, I've got this down, yeah, as one of the saves of the weekend, and it's one that, if this goes in, he gets blamed. We know how the commentators work, because it's shot from distance, it's not taken a deflection, and there would be question marks. But when you see it from behind, and you see the fact that there's very little spin on the ball, it is moving all over the place. Naturally, his first step is to the right, because that was where the ball was going. And then to readjust and get a toe to it and somehow get it over the bar, I thought this was absolutely magnificent. Top save. You mentioned Gavin Batsunu there. Yeah, look, really proactive, brave goalkeeping. Certainly not rash at all. You know, it's one of them. Talk about nullifying something at source, and that's essentially what he's done. It would have been a dangerous situation, but he's 30, 35 yards from his goal, diving header, put his head in, you know, where the lads kick it as well. I thought this was very, very good goalkeeping. And the last point I'll make on the Championship was a couple of great saves from Patterson. Certainly the one-on-one save was very good, but I love the save full stretch to his left, because he's moving to his right, had to readjust so quickly. So to get a dive away in the way that he did, full stretch, fingertips, brilliant save.
And some quick EFL extra bits to go through with you from midweek, which is sometimes when we have games in midweek, we take the decision, don't we? Do we do one earlier on in the week and just miss the midweek games, or do we wait until a Thursday and factor them in? Last week, we didn't wait until the Thursday, and lo and behold, there was so much action to talk about and some excellent goalkeeping on display. So we'll just quickly touch on some of the key highlights, I suppose, from midweek. Firstly, 250 professional appearances up for Connor Ripley in midweek. There's a pod coming soon with Connor, so stay tuned for that. But a big moment in the game between Barnsley and Wickham. So Max Strick, in the dying moments of the game, possibly the last kick of the game, was felled by Sam Cosgrove, who tapped in the winner, much to the dismay of Wickham manager Matt Bloomfield, much to the dismay of goalkeeper Max Strick. What did you make of this?
Yeah, I've never, ever seen anything like this before. I was watching, I was streaming the games, I was watching Sky Sports News, so they're showing a lot of the goals, and you could tell when the pundits come on and said, look, this is one of the most bizarre goals you're going to see. And it really was, in that you could see that Strick was obviously wasting a little bit of time, as you do towards the end of a game. And it's one of those moments where he's waited to pick the ball up, he's got that nudge, but ordinarily the nudge would be a bit more. And then you go down, you have the theatrics, the ref gives a foul, the crowd get annoyed. You see it over and over, but this was just that bit different in that the nudge probably wasn't strong enough. Well, it wasn't strong enough for him to go down, but he was already ready to go down to kind of play the whole part in this big theatre that we're watching. And of course, as he's hit the deck, he's just dropped the ball. And so it's one of them, like, of course, we'll always back up goalkeepers. And I don't know, by the letter of the law, is that a foul? Because he has nudged him a little bit. But it was just the way it looks. He went down so theatrically and the ball then pops out. Then he also tries to scramble to get it, which then makes it look less of a foul, because he is trying to get the second ball rather than maybe just staying on the floor and pretending that he's injured. So I don't know, it was just a really bizarre minute. And yeah, to happen in the last minute of a game, I'm gutted for him, because yeah, just a horrible, horrible moment.
Yeah, bonkers. Very, very odd to watch. The other point of note was the number of goalkeeping substitutions, both in midweek and on Saturday. So midweek alone, I think this was just in League Two. So John McCracken off for Jack McIntyre, that was Accrington. Owen Evans off for Jordan Smith, that was Walsall. Arthur Okonkwo off for Mark Howard, that's Wrexham. Sam Slocum for Aidan Stone, Notts County. Nick Pope, as we've spoken about, for Martin Dubravka, Newcastle. Jose Sarr for Dan Bentley, Wolves. And even Bernd Leno in the wars for Fulham at Anfield. It was all going off.
Yeah, which I think, again, look, time of the year, the number of games. I mean, I say that, and actually each of these injuries, you go through them. I think he's broke his jaw from what I've heard. And you kind of hear the obviously Nick Pope we've mentioned as well. You do wonder how many are because of the number of games, and ordinarily that would be strains and what have you. But a lot of these are actually impact injuries. So, you know, you always try and sort of read between the lines and figure out, is there a reason that it just happened this week, or is it just coincidence? But no, you're right. The number that came off was, I think it was on the, maybe in one league alone, it was like 4 in one night, which I've never, ever heard of. But again, I can't help but feel the time of the year, the conditions, it's all going to play a bit of a part.
A few more bits to finish up, Richard. It was the FA Cup second round weekend, so we'll just quickly rattle through some of the highlights. Fleetwood's Stephen McMullen on the wrong end of a 4-0 defeat to Cambridge, but one crumb of comfort in not being fooled by a poor Panenka from Yassan Ahadmi. Three big saves from our old pal Jordi van Stappenshove as Aldershot took League 2 leader Stockport to a replay. Seven saves overall from the Dutchman, who kept Nick Powell and Odin Bailey at bay. Lucas Kovalan, another former name there, a mix-up for the opener as Maidstone fell behind to Barrow, but very much leading the troops as the club reached the third round for the first time since 1988. And I wanted to mention the 17 shots on target for AFC Wimbledon against Ramsgate last night. It ended 5-0 to AFC Wimbledon, but should have been far more had it not been for Tom Hadler. He was in inspired form to keep the scoreline down.
Yeah, interesting weekend on that front, and there's some really good third round ties actually, and you mentioned a few of the clubs that have made it to the third round, so looking forward to seeing that. And I will just mention Tom Hadler, inspired, Matthew, that's the word that I would use. I didn't have many performances like that. I had one or two. Do you want me to name those performances or
no, please go on, indulge us.
No, do you know what, I won't because I feel like I do it far too often on this podcast, and I can see the rolling of your eyes from here, from all the way in Dubai. I can see it from here, so I won't. But yeah, well done to him. Great performance. And as you say, it could have been a heck of a lot more if it wasn't for that.
Excellent. Okay, finishing up with some of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper keeper.
So firstly, Hamburg v St. Pauli in the Bundesliga 2. This was a local derby, which didn't help Daniel Hoyer Fernandez when he booted the ball in off the bar into his own net, which we should say was the result of a terrible back pass from his own man. It made it 2-0 at the time to St. Pauli, but luckily for Fernandez, Hamburg fought back to draw the game 2-2.
Yeah, and it's how often do you see it where the opposition don't touch the ball from a restart, but score a goal. You know, it's so bizarre. Where it was a short goal kick, then it was played wide, then it's a terrible back pass. And look, you know, we're always going to see it from a goalkeeper's point of view. I mean, it's a horrible one to deal with. They always say, like, as a defender, you know, don't pass it back between the sticks. Always pass it slightly wide. Well, he'd done it right towards the goal in the horrible area. And again, it kind of reminds me of sort of Sunday League football where you've got puddles in the goal mouth, you know. But this was worse because it was just bobbly. And as he's gone to strike it, massive bobble. I mean, it's just one of them. I feel really bad for him because he's tried to do the right thing. He realised, I'm in danger here. I just need to clear this. And in fairness, he's gone to do exactly the right thing, takes the bobble off the shin, and then absolutely rockets into the back of the net. So it was, look, it's amusing to watch because, yeah, it couldn't have been a worse goal kick routine. I think that has to be up there with the worst goal kick routines of all time. But yeah, just a really tough moment for him, given that I don't know what else he can do.
I think as far as mistakes and errors go, that's probably, in my opinion, one of the best types to make, because one is very funny and he's going to laugh about that with his teammates at some point, maybe even with his goalkeeper coach. And two, it's not like that is a really technical error. Yes, it's not great with his feet, but like you said, a massive bobble. He's just tried to leather it. It's not gone the way he wants. And it's just funny. I think as a mistake to move on from, that one should be quite easy because that is never, ever going to happen again. And it's not something where you look at your game and think, oh, I really need to sort that out. It's just a complete freak moment.
Yeah, I agree. I think I've told you this story many times, but and I'll tell it many more because it's one that even now sticks in my mind. When I was at Watford, I was about 16. I was on the bench, but the lad that was playing goal kick, and if you can imagine, he's on the left-hand side of his six-yard box, and he's seen the right back as peeled off for the ball, but he didn't want to hit it with his left foot. He wasn't overly comfortable with his left foot, so he's run round the ball and he's gone to ping it out to the right back with his right foot, slipped a little bit, and he shanked it. And honestly, it could not have gone more into the top corner, just arrowed into the top corner from a goal kick. But I always tell the story, the bit that was probably the funniest about it was we're all like, oh wow, we're 1-0 down, but he knew that that isn't a goal. If you put a goal kick into your own net, it's a corner. And straight away, he's running up to the ref. Ref, it's a corner. It's a corner. He knew that it was, which made me wonder, has he done this before? But it is one of those moments, as you say, that like it happens. I know a few people had likened the bobble to the Paul Robinson one. And again, sometimes it just isn't that much you can do. Like, you know, I don't think if he has that situation again, he probably does exactly the same thing again, just tries to clear it as hard as he can. If it takes a bobble, it takes a bobble.
It all went off in Serie A, so plenty going on at the weekend. Firstly, the game between Lecce and Bologna. Vladimiro Falcone, the Lecce goalkeeper, was up the back for a corner in the 97th minute of the game. He was hauled down, VAR gave it, Lecce equalised with that penalty, the last kick of the game.
There you go, just backing up our case that it does make sense for goalkeepers to go up in the final minute. You never know. And yeah, credit to him. He was right in the mix. It was a blatant foul. And as you say, it was crucial for the team in the end.
Gianluigi Donnarumma sent off for PSG. I know this isn't Serie A. We're going to get back to Serie A. This is Ligue 1, of course, in their game with Le Havre at the weekend. Not the best week for Donnarumma. He gifted that goal to Monaco, Takumi Minamino, last weekend. He was questioned for the Newcastle goal in the Champions League. And now this, I guess the big point from all of this is that PSG haven't lost any of those games, 1-2 and drawn 1.
Yeah, which goes back to the point you made earlier. And when that happens, it can often be forgotten quite quickly. Again, I felt for him a little bit on this one in that, yeah, you watch it back. The play would have been probably similar to the Batsunu one we spoke about earlier in the show, where if he comes out and heads it, that, of course, he would have got there ahead of the striker. The problem with heading it, you're never going to be able to get the distance. So naturally, if you can wait for it to drop and you can clear it with your foot, you're going to get that much more distance, be able to put it to safety. And it was just one of them. It just wasn't quite dropping for him. And we'll see this mistake over and over again, you know, many more times, because, yeah, it's difficult. In your peripheral vision, you can see the player coming in, but you can never quite know how much time you've got. And it was a split second. The guy's got there just before him. And, of course, he swung to clear it, and it is a red card.
And can we finish with the goalkeeper assist klaxon, please? Mike Maignan of AC Milan, his third assist in successive seasons. So that is more now than any goalkeeper in Serie A since 2004-05. The goal was scored by Christian Pulisic. It was in the victory over Frosinone. And Pulisic did say after the game that apparently they've been practicing that in training.
Yeah, well, it was a lovely pass. You know, the trajectory, the amount of distance he's got on it. But again, it doesn't surprise me. I do believe that. And I sometimes we do the klaxon and, yeah, you kind of see the goal and it might just be a punt upfield and a few things work out and the striker finishes it. This was a beautiful pass right into his path. It's a great finish, by the way, as well. Like, he had a lot to do, and credit to him, it's a brilliant finish. But the execution of the strike was bang on.
Lovely stuff, Richard. Thank you for your time this morning. And thank you to those who contributed to the show. Like I said, it's always welcomed to hear from the listeners at GK Union on Twitter. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net on our phone number 07503673020. We love to hear your views, your opinions, your voice notes. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks, Keepers
Away.